The T-Biz podcast delivers tea news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Each year, the T-Biz portal publishes the State of the Tea Industry Forecast, a forward-looking assessment of production, pricing, trade, and demand. We invite tea professionals across the value chain to review the findings and contribute their perspective. Your insights help refine the forecast before it is finalized on March 1st.
Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. 1 year after tariffs, the tea industry's costly lesson. Then join us on the floor at World Tea Expo and consider a regulatory shock as EU tightens MRL enforcement. Plus, World Tea Expo, a show transformed. This week, we're on the floor at World Tea Expo in Las Vegas, where the show has quietly transformed. No longer a standalone tea event, it's now embedded inside a broader bar and restaurant ecosystem. Traffic's up, matcha's everywhere. But for specialty tea, the question now is sharper than ever. Is this still our show, or has the market moved elsewhere? Stay tuned for my commentary. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia Tea Estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
This week marks 1 year since U.S. tariffs swept through the global tea trade, an industry that neither caused the dispute nor benefited from the policy. For tea, the outcome is now clear. This was not protection, it was taxation. Start with the fundamentals. The United States is the world's second largest tea importer, but domestic production is effectively non-existent, about 0.02% of imported volume. That means tariffs could never achieve their stated goal of reshoring production. Instead, they imposed a direct cost on a fully import-dependent supply chain, and that cost was real. Using 2024 import levels as a baseline, U.S. importers likely paid tens of millions of dollars in tariffs over the past year, roughly $20 million on Chinese tea alone. That money did not improve quality, didn't reduce freight times, didn't expand demand. It went to customs. The burden didn't stay there. Tariffs are paid at entry, but they cascade. Importer margins compress first, then distributors adjust. Then retailers reprice, or they reduce assortment. By the time tea reaches the shelf, the price increase often exceeds the tariff itself, and the data confirms it. Economic analysis shows nearly 90% of tariff costs were absorbed by U.S. firms and customers, not by foreign exporters. In tea, that showed up exactly as expected, with higher shelf prices, fewer promotions, tighter SKUs, and in some cases, disappearing products. But the most important effect wasn't price, it was trade distortion. Tariffs don't stop trade, they just redirect it. As U.S. barriers increased, Chinese tea exports flowed more aggressively into West Africa and North Africa, markets with lower barriers and established demand. At the same time, U.S. buyers began shifting sourcing towards Japan, Vietnam, or blended alternatives. Not because they were better, but because they were cheaper to land. This is the structural damage. Once supply chains move, they don't readily snap back, and the impact wasn't evenly distributed. Large multinationals adapted. They quickly diversified origins, adjusted packaging, and leveraged their scale. Smaller importers could not. For them, tariffs became a working capital shock layered onto freight volatility and currency risk. In practical terms, cash flow tightened, inventory decisions became riskier, and margin for error disappeared. There was partial relief. Tea was removed from the reciprocal trade list in late 2025. but the system did not immediately reset. Chinese tea still faces legacy 301 duties, and in 2026, a new Section 122 surcharge reintroduced broad import uncertainty. So while the policy shifted, the risks remain. 1 year on, the verdict is straightforward. Tariffs did not strengthen the tea industry. They made it more expensive, more volatile, and more fragmented. Business insight. Section 301 is not over. In March 2026, the U.S. Trade Representative launched a new round of Section 301 investigations, this time targeting structural overcapacity across multiple countries, including India, Japan, Vietnam, Indonesia, and Bangladesh, all major tea producers. Tea's not explicitly named, but that misses the point. Section 301 is the same mechanism that created the China tariff regime. Once opened, it gives policymakers the option to expand tariffs directly or indirectly across supply chains. For tea, the risk is not just leaf, it's everything around it. Packaging, machinery, food service inputs, logistics. Even if tea itself remains untouched, the cost structure around tea can rise. And if the scope expands, key origin countries are already inside the investigative perimeter. Bottom line, the tea industry is no longer dealing with a one-off tariff event. It is operating inside a more interventionist trade environment where tariffs can appear quickly, exemptions can just as readily disappear, and uncertainty becomes a permanent cost. On the floor at World Tea Expo, exhibitors were relocated to the main stage, grouped under a unified World Tea Expo banner alongside bar, cafe, and restaurant suppliers. The result was a materially different attendee mix. The on-the-floor experience was broadly positive, particularly from suppliers aligned with current demand signals. Matcha marketers were delighted to present to a broad swath of cafe and restaurants, even fast food chains. Yvonne O'Chang of Leafberry emphasized the enduring value of the event as a networking platform. Quote, "We are always excited to meet new people, build connections, and build a community," she said. Caitlin Sissel of Royal Tea noted strong B2B engagement. Quote, "We've got a lot of good connections here. People looking for loose leaf tea," end quote. And both Japanese and Chinese exporters echoed a familiar theme. There's a huge demand for matcha this year, they said. Innovation was present, though secondary to demand-driven categories, from lacto-fermented sparkling teas by Nagami Sencha to automated pod-based brewing systems pitched by Wei Zhao. Exhibitors used the show to test concepts rather than to scale them. Even adjacent categories, such as natural sweetening leaves marketed by Go Sweets in China, found audience curiosity.
This is Dan Bolton with the TBiz Podcast, and I'm on the floor this week at World Tea Expo in Las Vegas. And I'm with Yvonne O'Shane with Leafberry today. Yvonne, tell me a little about the show.
Well, it's been a wonderful show. This is my third time exhibiting here at the World Tea Expo, and we are always excited to meet new people, build connections, and build a community.
Tell me a little about Leafberry.
So Leafberry is a specialty tea company that's based in Dallas, Texas, and we specialize in teas exclusively grown in Kenya. I am a fourth-generation tea producer from Kenya, and our niche is the purple leaf tea that's grown in Kenya.
Thank you so much. This is Dan Bolton on the floor at World Tea Expo in Las Vegas. I'm at the Royal Tea New York booth, and I'm with Caitlin Sissel. Tell me about the show, Caitlin.
The show has been pretty good this year. It's been super busy the both days, and we've made a lot of good connections for, you know, people who are looking for loose leaf tea. So it's been exciting.
So tell me about these teas.
We're a B2B importer and tea supplier, so we sell to a lot of businesses in the U.S. We don't do any direct-to-consumer, do like mostly white label. We offer over 100 different leaf teas, tea blends, herbs, spices, botanicals. We also have an e-commerce platform to make things super simple for our customers, and we really focus on, you know, creating relationships that last long term and providing approachable minimums and pricing.
Thanks so much for taking part in our On the Floor program. This is Dan Bolton on the floor at World Tea Expo in Las Vegas, and I'm speaking to
Hui Nguyen,
James Ye,
and they're with Fujian Oriental Tea Company. Tell me a little about the show.
We love it so far. You know, so far we have had a lot of interest, you know, from new businesses, and we can see there's a huge request and demand for matcha this year.
Yeah, and we met a lot of old friends and some new friends who are interested in our teas. Yeah.
Tell me about your company.
Fujian Oriental Teas, we have been in business, you know, for 16 years, and we offer a big variety of Chinese tea from black, white, green, to oolong, and also matcha and hojicha.
Thank you so much, both of you.
This is Dan Bolton with Tai Kayuki Tata, president of Nagamine Saisha, a Japanese company that offers a variety of lacto-fermented tea. The company was established in 1876 and uses lactic acid to make sparkling tea for pairing with food.
Can you talk in Japanese?
Yeah, you can record in Japanese. ノンアルコールで、その糖も無糖です。砂糖を加えてません。 ですから甘くないスパークリングティーで、食事に合わせるペアリングするためのお茶として作りました。で、原料はすべて、有機栽培のお茶を使います。お茶が中心のスパークリングティー。甘みはありません。はい。だからいろんな食事に合うと思います。
So it's a fermented tea like you would see with the puer.
Puer aerobic. Fermentation, but we like fermented in an aerobic environment.
This trade show, first time trade show?
Yes.
I'm on the floor with Wei Zhao, who is marketing a pod tea brewer made in China. Tell me about the machine, Wei.
In this machine, you press the cap, press the button, then you give your the hot tea. It's pretty simple.
So are these pods standard for other machines?
Can you get released in the espresso machine?
How long have you been in business?
Around 2 years. 2 years. We developed the products almost 2 years.
And where are you based?
Based in Dallas, Texas. The company based in China, Hangzhou.
So then you function as like a distributor and sales outlet.
We do open to that because we are. That's part of the reason we are here for the show to try to find a partner to try to promote these products the better way. Either it comes through distributor or direct to the dealer or consumer, whatever. So we open to everything.
Excellent. I'm going to take some tea, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah. You want to try?
Yeah. This is Dan Bolton on the floor at World Tea Expo in Las Vegas with Andrew Wan. Tell me about the show, Andrew.
Yeah, we have been here for 3 years, and we're looking for the next year, actually. So lots of people here, lots of tea lovers here, and we see many, many people interested in our product. It's very, very amazing.
Now, tell me about Go Sweet, what you do, and why people should love it.
Yeah, so we are not selling the tea here. We are actually selling a very unique tree leaf. These leaves can help your health. It can make your tea sweet. We are not adding any sugar, but the sweet coming from the nature, from the tree leaf.
Thank you so much. This is Dan Bolton on the floor at World Tea Expo in Las Vegas, and I'm at the Fujicom Matcha booth with Vincent Scalgon. Vincent, tell me about the show.
It's been a great time. It's been really exciting, busy 2 days. This is our first time exhibiting at the World Tea Expo. It's been a great time. Well, we've had people coming from all sorts of different types of businesses, with cafe owners, bar owners, restaurant owners, and also just tea enthusiasts come by, asking lots of questions, sampling the matcha. So So we had a lot of fun just handing out matcha samples, toji dot samples, the different drinks and things, answering questions.
Excellent. Now tell me a little about your company.
So I'm a co-founder. Also, Jessica Choice is my other co-founder. We founded it about 3 years ago in our living room, and we both love tea. So we decided, why not kind of solve the matcha shortage problem by making matcha more accessible in the United States, but not just any matcha, really premium and authentic matcha. So we go to Japan about once every 2 months or so, and we meet with different tea farmers in different regions like Uji, Yame, Kagoshima, and Shizuoka. I mean, we built strong relationships with all these different farmers, built a really strong tea network that imports a matcha into the United States to our warehouse in Sunnyvale, California. We have a really large walk-in fridge where we store all our matcha, which is readily available for all our cafes and restaurants all on demand.
Thanks so much for the information that you provided, and good luck at the show.
Oh, thank you.
European authorities are stepping up enforcement of pesticide maximum residue levels, known as MRLs, on imported tea. There's been no major change in the legal thresholds. What changed is how aggressively those standards are being applied at the border, and the effect is immediate. Exporters in North India, Assam and the Dwars, and in Kenya are reporting increased sampling, longer clearance times, and a rising number of flagged shipments. Containers that once moved through routinely are now being held for lab verification. That introduces delay, cost, and most importantly, risk. For Kenya, the issue is structural. Much of its tea flows through smallholder networks coordinated by KTDA factories. Even when factories meet standards, upstream variability creates exposure. One non-compliant lot can disrupt an entire shipment. In India, the challenge is different, but just as serious. Legacy agrochemical practices built around yield stability are colliding with a regulatory environment that now demands precision and traceability. This is not a marginal tightening. It's a shift in how the EU market functions. The EU remains one of the highest-value tea markets globally. Germany, the UK, the Netherlands, France are premium markets, but access now comes with higher compliance costs. Exporters are facing additional testing expenses of $50 to $150 per lot for pre-shipment verification, and a much bigger financial risk if shipments are rejected or delayed. And here's where it becomes strategic. Even without changing the law, the EU has effectively raised the cost of entry. This is a non-tariff barrier in practice. It's probabilistic, uneven, and difficult to price. So what happens next? In the short term, we're seeing friction, shipment delays, contract disputes, renegotiations. In the medium term, volume begins to move. Teas that would normally go to Europe are being rerouted to Russia, the Middle East, and Central Asia. These are viable markets, but they don't deliver the same price realization. That means margin compression in the tea lands. And long term, the structure of the market changes. Compliance is no longer optional. It becomes a prerequisite. Buyers are already tightening procurement, requiring certifications, probe analysis, traceability documentation, and proven supplier consistency. The result is a two-tiered market. On one side, compliant, traceable teas with stable access to premium EU buyers. On the other, non-compliant teas moving into lower-margin destinations. The middle disappears. This is not just about regulation, it's about sorting. The EU market is selecting for suppliers who can meet a higher operational standard and excluding those who cannot. The Week 13 Tea Price Report for the period ending March 27th is sponsored by the East Africa Tea Trade Association, owners of the Mombasa Tea Auction since 1956. Tea markets closed ISO Week 13 with prices still largely influenced by quality, buyer selectivity, and disciplined exporter behavior rather than any broad increase in demand. Reports from the current week suggest a generally stable but uneven market across all major auction centers, with strength mainly in well-produced teas and growing pressure on secondary descriptions. In Colombo, prices averaged $3.21 per kilo this week, which was down 2 cents a kilo from the previous week, reflecting fair demand but softer performance in parts of the premium and ex-estate catalogs amid increased offerings. In North India, Calcutta, Silguri, and Guwahati, prices averaged $1.88 a kilo, about 9 cents higher than the previous week, supported by stronger demand and improved T-board benchmark averages. In Mombasa in Kenya, prices averaged $2.21 a kilo, which was down 1 cent per kilo for the previous week, reflecting steady but slightly easier conditions with unsold volumes in key grades. In Indonesia, prices averaged $2.41 a kilo, up 1 cent, supported by improved demand and tighter offerings. Across the T-lands, pricing was mixed. Clearance remains orderly but selective, with persistent unsold volumes in East Africa due to geopolitical unrest and uneven performance across Colombo catalogs. Visit www.tjourney.pub and select T-Price Report for a detailed regional breakdown, six-month trade signals, and near-term outlook for quarter two pricing. That's the tea price report for week 13, ending 27 March, 2026. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hello, I'm Bogdan, a passionate tea drinker and the inventor of the ultimate tea machine, the Brewmaker One. Preparation is key to making fine tea. Sequential steepings deliver the best taste possible and unlock the true value of whole leaf teas and botanicals. Brew automates that process without using any pots or capsules. This simple-to-operate smartphone-controlled device stores steeping profiles to consistently make great tea at the push of a button. Brew also reduces time, waste, and energy. That's because I engineered the brew to remember control settings for temperature, brewing time, and quantity. Using my patented process lets you stack steep simply and conveniently.
World Tea Expo was once the center of gravity for the specialty tea trade in North America, a place where retailers, importers, and producers aligned around a shared vision of quality, origin, and education. In 2026, that center shifted. The show floor is busier, the audience is broader, matcha and Japanese green tea suppliers were highly visible thanks to government-backed export programs. But the board-sponsored pavilions from past years representing Sri Lanka, India, and Africa were not. Lipton Tea made its first appearance at the show with food service offerings. Innovation is increasingly shaped by trends in cafe and beverage service. But beneath the energy is a structural question. When a trade show grows by changing its audience, does it also change its purpose? For some exhibitors, this is an expansion. For others, it is a displacement. And for the industry, it may mark the beginning of a new phase where tea no longer defines the room but competes within it. World Tea Expo was once the center of gravity for the specialty tea trade in North America. It was where retailers came to discover new origins, where importers built sourcing relationships, and where producers told the story behind the leaf. For nearly two decades, it functioned as a category-defining marketplace, not just a trade show, but a signal of where the specialty tea industry was headed. In 2026, that center shifted. The show floor is busier. That's the first thing you notice from the ribbon-cutting rush to the blaring music. Foot traffic is strong, consistent, and on the surface encouraging, but you look a little closer and the composition of that audience tells a different story. It's no longer a tea-first audience. It's a food service-driven audience. Bars, cafes, restaurant operators moving through the same aisles as tea suppliers, and that changes everything. This year, World Tea Expo is no longer operating as a standalone event. It is embedded within a much larger commercial environment, co-located with the Bar and Restaurant Expo, which is celebrating its 40th edition. That decision has delivered what organizers wanted: more people, more movement, more exposure. At its height, World Tea Expo attracted 3,500 attendees. The Bar and Restaurant Expo routinely attracts 35,000. But exposure is not the same as alignment. For some exhibitors, the shift is working. Matcha and Japanese tea suppliers in particular are seeing real traction. Their booths are active. Sampling is constant. Conversations are commercial. And this is not accidental. Japanese participation this year is highly visible and highly coordinated. Government-backed export programs, particularly out of Shizuoka, have underwritten pavilion space, enabling smaller producers to access the U.S. market at scale. This is strategic, and it reflects a larger truth. North America has become the primary growth engine for Japan's green tea exports. But walk a few steps further down the aisle, and the story changes. Exhibitors focused on single-origin loose-leaf tea, specialty retail, high-end sourcing, they're asking a different question. Who exactly am I here to meet? Because the traditional buyer, the independent tea retailer, the specialty importer, the high-touch shop owner, is no longer the dominant presence on the floor. Instead, the dominant buyer is looking for beverages at scale, products that integrate into menus, and formats that move quickly. And that's not the same market. There were also notable absences. In previous years, the board sponsored pavilions from Sri Lanka, India, and East Africa played a central role, anchoring origin representation and reinforcing the global supply chain. ITI, an anchor with the largest booth for years, folded last year. This year, those pavilions were absent, and so were Stalwarts, Rishi Tea, Seven Cups, and Teaspot. There were no tea bar clusters of retail fans surrounding the specialty retail pioneers like Austin Hodge, Frank Miller, Roy Fong, Eva Lee. We will never again see a Bill Waddington, Devin Shaw, John Harney, and Stash co-founder Stephen Smith. In their place, a heavier concentration of commercial beverage brands and formats. Even Lipton, historically absent from this environment, made an appearance, targeting food service channels with ready-to-deploy offerings. That's not a small signal. That's a structural one. So what does the show look like today? It looks like a beverage show where tea is one category of many non-alcoholic offerings. And this year, within that category, one product dominated: matcha. Matcha was everywhere. It's driving traffic, it's driving sampling, it's driving conversations, but it's also reshaping expectations because much of the demand we're seeing is not rooted in traditional tea culture, it's rooted in modern beverage formats. Matcha lattes, iced drinks, smoothies, dessert applications, and confectionery. This is tea as an ingredient. Tea is a platform. And tea as a functional input in a broader beverage system. And that raises an important question for the industry. If demand is being driven by format, not origin, what happens to the value chain? Because specialty tea, as it was built, depends on origin differentiation, processing complexity, storytelling, and tea education. Those are not the primary drivers in a food service environment. It's speed, consistency, and margin. Now, to be clear, this is not a failing show. From a commercial standpoint, it may be the most successful show ever. Traffic's up, engagement is strong, new categories are entering, but success depends on your market position. The U.S. is now Japan's number one export market for tea by value, with volume approaching 6,000 metric tons. Revenue last year was 40 million yen, about 270 million U.S., If you're selling matcha, ready-to-drink concepts, or functional beverage ingredients, this is a premier global expansion market. Tea shops are an afterthought. Matcha is now a top three non-coffee beverage globally in cafes. The World Coffee Portal reports, quote, global matcha beverage sales in coffee shops are now estimated at 3 to 8 billion annually, end quote. If you're selling high-end Wulong, rare white teas, or estate-driven black teas, this may feel like displacement. One of the most telling conversations at the show came not from a large exhibitor, but from a startup, a new entrepreneur early in the journey, walking the floor not to sell, but to understand. Pat Ahern, a former major league pitcher who launched Inside Corner Tea, described the expo as a place, quote, to get a feel for the industry, to see where the opportunities and problems are, end quote. That instinct is right, because what the show now represents is not just a marketplace, it's a diagnostic tool. It shows you where demand is moving and where it is not. There's still innovation here. You see it in new brewing technologies, in experimental formats like sparkling tea, in cross-category products that blur the line between tea and wellness. But innovation in specialty tea is no longer leading the show. It's demand. And that brings us to the central question. When a trade show grows by changing its audience, does it also change its purpose? For 20 years, World Tea Expo has helped define the specialty tea category. It created a space where tea stood on its own, where quality mattered, origin mattered, and where leaf, not format, was the focus. In 2026, tea does not define the room. It competes within it. And that may be the most important signal of all, because it suggests that the industry itself is entering a new phase, one where tea is no longer insulated as a specialty category, but integrated into a much larger, more competitive beverage ecosystem. For some, that's growth. For others, it's dilution. For everyone, it's a shift that requires attention. The question is no longer whether the market is changing. Since the pandemic, it already has. The question is whether the industry will adapt, or whether it will continue to build for a market that no longer exists quite the same way. Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of TBiz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the TBiz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.